Afterward, Bates took Huey and Snort to the saloon, where the goods had the opposite effect, warming all the way to the toes. There, Huey found a lot of cowboys in town, either to watch or to participate in the roping. By the time all the howdying and handshaking was done, his arm was almost too tired to lift a rope. The boys were waiting outside for him.
Uncle Huey! We've seen us an automobile!
It's just around that corner yonder.
Huey wasn't all that interested. He was itching to go and get his name into the pot for the roping. But he decided to smile over an automobile and act as if he liked it, though telling a lie was a mortal sin. To him, it looked like every other automobile he'd ever seen in his travels, mostly just a glorified buggy with rubber tires and without a horse. Down beneath the bed was an ugly-looking engine, leaking oil. Over the dashboard was a long shaft with a wheel on it that he knew was the mechanism for guiding the brainless contraption. All in all, he didn't see much there to detain a man for more than a minute or two.
Now, this is the crank. You have to turn it to get the engine.
Cotton walked around the automobile, learnedly pointing out all its features, telling what each was for and what part it played in making the monster lumber down the road and scare good horses half to death. Cotton seemed to know a lot, never having laid eyes on one of these before. Snort Yarnell seemed impressed by Cotton's knowledge, though he understood no more of it than Huey did. Cotton was leaning over the seat, pointing to some doodad and thingamajig on the dash, when a tall man with a derby hat, a new suit, and a waxed mustache stepped out of a nearby barbershop. He reeked of bay rum.
Boy, you get your grimy hands away from that automobile.
He came striding purposefully down the plank sidewalk. Cotton drew back as if he had been shot. The man pointed a finger at him.
Don't you know the meaning of private property, kid? Don't you know that's an expensive piece of machinery? Be damned if I let some ignorant farm boy hoodoo it.
Huey moved between his nephew and the angry-eyed dude.
Hey, the button didn't mean no harm. And he may be a farm boy, but he's no ways ignorant.
The well-dressed gent gave Huey a hard stare that silently put him in a class no more than one notch above a yellow mongrel dog. There were a lot of people who didn't realize what a good cowboy was worth.
Every generation ought to make a little improvement over the one before it.
This time, Cotton stepped between Huey and the man.
Uncle Huey, I've seen the automobile now. Let's get away from here.
Huey had never been a fist fighter and had customarily gone well out of his way to avoid a fight when he could. In this case, he was disposed toward making an exception. Cotton caught him by the arm.
Let's go, Uncle Huey.
Snort had put a fresh chew of tobacco in his mouth after the drink. Now he needed to spit. He deposited a brown blob on the rear tire. It began to run and drip.
Son of a bitch!
The dude stepped quickly to wipe away what he could with his white handkerchief.
Huey, we better go see about that roping.
Huey nodded, but looked back as he walked away.
I hope he's forced to trade that thing for a mean Missouri mule. And I hope that mule kicks him so hard it melts the wax out of his mustache.
I had a mustache one time. Kept it 2 or 3 years. You remember it, Huey? Finally got rid of it. Kept burning it off, smoking my cigarettes short.
As they made their way into the fairgrounds, Huey reflected on the list of entrants he saw when he and Snort signed up for the competition.
They got Clay McGonigal and Joe Gardner here, the champions of the whole world. And Fred Baker and Jim Barron and Bob Mims, all the good ones, just about, except Ellis and Carroll. You ever rope against these fellas before?
Nope, but that gives us the advantage, don't you see? They don't know what they're up against.
The fairgrounds lay in a big open flat east of town. The arena was almost the size of a horse trap. Huey guessed it at 10 acres, its far end reaching all the way to the steep bank of the main concho on the south. At the north end stood a small grandstand and the holding pens where 60 or 70 long-legged, long-horned Mexico steers pulled hay out of wooden racks as if it were free, trampling half of it underfoot. Wagons and buggies lined up along the arena fence on either side. The roping was supposed to begin at 2 o'clock. Snort strayed off to visit with old friends and bask in the glory of his reputation. Huey rode Biscuit leisurely through the crowd, looking for people he knew, studying the ropers and their mounts. Once his breath came up short as he saw a woman in the crowd. She looked for all the world like Spring Renfro. He couldn't imagine what Spring would be doing here. He eased Biscuit up closer and saw that he was mistaken. She didn't look like Spring at all. The woman stared at him, disturbed by his uninvited attention. Huey turned away, perplexed by his error. He had no idea why spring should remain so strong on his mind.
Uncle Huey! Yonder comes that automobile!
Huey reined Biscuit around and saw the same red vehicle driven by the slicked-up dude. Sitting with him in the front were two young and handsome women dressed like Christmas packages. Huey doubted that they were his sisters. A man with a woman and three kids in a hack had to saw desperately on the reins to keep his team from taking the bits in their teeth and leaving there. Horses snorted and scattered. The dude pushed the automobile through the crowd to seek a place beside the arena fence.
Be slow with that noise, you'll hurt somebody!
If some husky fella would go over there and take the curl out of that mustache, he would be the most popular man at the fairgrounds, Huey thought. He was not seeking honors, however. Presently, Snort appeared.
Huey, how much money you got?
As little stock as Huey placed in money, Snort cared even less. Huey had most of the pay from Alvin, but caution made him reply in the most general terms.
Some?
Let me have it. I'll double or triple it for you. There's a damn fool over yonder got more money than sense. He's given odds.
Huey kept his hands in his pockets.
Competition's fierce.
Competition is like sugar sprinkled on cobbler pie. Where's your faith?
Well, faith is one thing. Charity is something else.
It's that fool yonder who's being charitable. Come on, let me have what you got.
Snort Yarnell was a hard man to refuse. Against his judgment, Huey dug out most of what he had. He was careful to retain a little wad of paper in his pocket, hoping it didn't show. He had no idea how much it was or how much he handed over. Snort disappeared again. Cotton stared at Huey in exasperation.
Uncle Huey! You've ridden Bronx. Doctored wormy cattle. Done God knows what to earn all that money.
He had that much of his mother in him and couldn't help it, Huey thought charitably.
Yep, easy come, easy go.
Cotton shook his head over lost causes and turned to watch Tommy, who was making a tentative and cautious acquaintanceship with some town boys of about his own age. Huey kept an eye on the youngsters for a minute. Sometimes town boys were prone to hoorah country boys shamelessly. But there seemed no harm in these. Huey turned his attention to the roping. His name was 2/3 of the way down the list, which gave him time to see how most of the others performed before he had to go out and give his due. The roper who was up held his horse in readiness beside a narrow wooden chute into which cowboys had put a single spotted steer. 50 feet out from the chute gate was the score line, drawn in white powdered chalk. As the gate opened, another rider chased the steer out toward the line. When the steer crossed the chalk mark, the judge dropped a red flag and gave the roper his signal to start. By this time, the steer was gaining speed and distance. The roper might require 60 to 100 yards of running room to catch up with him and make his throw. Snort was up just before Huey. He spurred out, swinging a loop big enough to catch a boxcar. As the loop sailed, its size diminished. When it fitted over the steer's horns, there weren't more than a couple of inches to spare. But success was what counted. He spurred past the steer, flipped the rope over the animal's rump, and rode off hard at an angle. The steer was jerked into a sudden 180-degree turn that lifted it off its feet and thumped it down soundly on its side. Instantly, Snort was on the ground with the tie rope in his hand. He gathered and wrapped 3 feet while the steer was still too stunned to kick much. He threw up his hands to stop the timekeeper's watches. Snort swaggered to his roan horse and remounted, waiting to hear the time and get his rope back.
The time? 38 3/5 seconds.
That put him in the lead for the first go-round. Snort rode toward Huey, those gold teeth shining.
You better whip up if you want to take second.
It had been a long time since Biscuit had been in a steer roping contest. He remembered enough to be nervous, so did Huey. The flagman stood poised at the end of the chalk score line, the flag up. The gate was open. A paint steer with a horn span of more than 3 feet entered the arena in a long trot. The whip-up man put it into a good run across the line. The red flag dropped. Huey touched spurs to Biscuit, but he didn't really need to. Biscuit remembered. He leaped out and after the steer in a dead run. Huey had his loop built and ready. It was a big blocker, after the style of the trail driving ab blocker, but not as big as Snort's. He gave it a few swings, judged he was positioned right, and flung it over the steer's horn. He jerked up the slack, sent it across the thin rump, and rode away. He felt a jarring impact at the end of the rope. He caught a glimpse of four legs in the air, then a small cloud of dust. He was on the ground and running. Biscuit kept charging ahead, dragging the steer to keep it from gaining its feet. Huey made a quick tie, threw up his hands, and lost his balance. He fell backward, landing hard. He heard the dude honk his horn two or three times. Huey got up and dusted himself off, his face warming. His embarrassment was more than offset by the far-off announcement of his time.
38 seconds flat.
Grinning, he sought out Snort with his eyes. Second hell, that's the best time yet. Huey mounted up and rode out of the arena, expecting to accept the congratulations of the two boys with becoming modesty. But they hadn't seen his performance. Tommy was out past the crowd with several boys, testing his prowess with a slingshot. Another automobile had arrived, this one green. Cotton was down there on the arena fence inspecting it. Huey remembered the applause and reflected glumly over the fact that it always seemed easier to impress strangers than one's own family.
Well, I hope you appreciate me letting you get your confidence.
Huey would have more confidence if he still held his lead after McGonagall and Gardner performed. As each man roped, he held his breath. They were good, but they came in just shy of his and Snort's times. McGonagall scored 39 seconds, Gardner 39-2. The second go-round started immediately. Warmed up now, many of the ropers bettered their original times. Snort went out and finished in 38-1.
You better draw her down fine, Huey.
Huey drew down fine and came back with 38 flat. The girls who sat in the red automobile cheered and clapped their hands for him as he rode by, to the annoyance of the dude. Huey made a little show of tipping his hat to the ladies. Again, he looked around to see if the boys witnessed his moment of triumph. Tommy was out of sight. Cotton was on his knees studying the running gear beneath the green automobile. Thank God for pretty women, Huey thought wryly. He felt the tension building in him as McGonagall roped, then Gardner. Gardner trimmed Huey's time a little and came out fastest for the second go-round. Huey scratched the figures in the dirt with his finger, did a little arithmetic, and found to his satisfaction that he still led for the average. If he could do well on three more steers, he might still carry away the silver watch he saw down at the saloon. He didn't know what he'd do with it if he won it. He wasn't in the habit of carrying a pocket watch, because if it ever stopped, he might be 3 months getting the correct time to reset it. He lived by the sun. Huey and Snort seesawed through the next two go-rounds, not taking the best time in either, but staying close enough to be in strong contention. Snort did his third steer up a little faster than Huey, which brought him back laughing loudly enough to hurt Huey's ears a little. Huey topped him by almost a full second on the fourth. The last go-round was usually the wildest in any rope. Those men who trailed would bust a buckle trying to catch up. All they had to lose was their necks, so they took long chances and fast loops. Some missed altogether, some caught just one horn. One let his horse get off stride just as he hit the end of the rope. The horse went down and rolled over. The crowd jumped to its feet, but the cowboy got up with nothing worse than a slight limp and a shredded shirt. Huey was beginning to feel the pressure building on him when he saw a familiar figure striding through the crowd and heard a familiar voice call his name.
Huey!
It was Walter. Huey's chin dropped in surprise. He put the shock behind him and rode over to shake hands.
You're a hard man to catch up with once you hit the trail. But I heard there was a roping and I figured I'd find you. How you standing?
Pretty good up to now. What are you doing here?
Eve didn't trust the boys to get home by themselves and not to get in trouble. She sent me to fetch them and to maybe talk you into coming back too.
Mad, wasn't she?
I'm not sure mad is a word. But it'll do till I think of a stronger one.
You ain't going to try to talk me into going back, are you?
You're of age, Huey. You've got a right to make up your own mind and live by your own lights.
Well, damn few people seem to think so.
Snort Yarnill's time came. He took a fresh chew of tobacco and rode up into place. He was the picture of supreme confidence, sitting straight and proud, shoulders reared back, gold teeth agleam. He spurred after the steer, swung his loop, and completely missed. It was a big surprise to both Snort and his blue roan horse. The horse slowed, confident Snort made a catch. He almost always did. By the time Snort built a second loop and finally caught his steer, he was way out of the money. But defeat rolled off his shoulders like water from a duck. He came back grinning as broadly as if he'd won.
Did you notice the shape of that loop, Huey? I do believe it was as pretty one as I ever throwed.
Yeah, but kind of empty, don't you think?
Huey sensed when he spurred out after his own steer that everything was perfect. The steer was just right. Biscuit was just right. The loop felt like prize money when it left his hand. It fitted over the horns as if it had been measured and trimmed. He laid the rope over those red and white hindquarters and rode off. The steer flipped over and flopped down as if it were trained and on his payroll. Huey jumped down to finalize his victory and tripped over his spurs. He went down hard on his face and belly. He pushed up just in time to see the steer before Biscuit dragged it right over him. His face was pressed down into the arena and he came up spitting dirt. His eyes burned from the sting of sand, and his ears burned from the laughter of the crowd. He got to his feet, looking around desperately for Biscuit and the steer. He saw them far down the arena, still going. Huey spat some more dirt.
Biscuit!
Huey went chasing ignominiously after them. The dude was taking his revenge. He managed to make his tie just to keep the record straight, but he didn't hear his time and didn't much care. The dude and one of the girls laughed at him as he rode by. The other girl looked guardedly sympathetic. Snort and Walter were waiting for him.
Never get anywhere here, you're trying to put both feet in one boot.
Walter didn't say anything. The two boys were there. They had finally watched Huey one time. Gotten took a cue from his father, not Tommy.
Uncle Huey, that was awful.
When all the times were tallied up, McGonagall finished first in the average, Gardner second.
Well, I reckon I got a little coffee drinking money coming to me for the first go-round anyway. Aside from that, I'm pert near broke.
You all wait for me.
Snort rode into the departing crowd. In a little while, he was back. He counted out a considerable handful of bills to Huey and shoved the rest of the roll into his own pocket. Huey's mouth dropped open.
What's that for? We lost the roping.
But not the bet. You didn't think I'd bet our hard-earned money on us, did you? I put it on Clay McGonagall and Joe Gardner against the field. Let's go to town. We'll get them boys an ice cream and us something stronger.
The traffic strung out in a long, dusty line of wagons, buggies, hacks, and horsemen, as well as numerous bicycles, a goodly number of people afoot. Huey looked over his shoulder and saw that dude with the ugly red automobile impatiently making his way through the crowd. He wasn't having any trouble clearing the horses. They were snorting and faunching to get out of the monster's path. He finally worked his way up close behind Cotton and Tommy. Tommy's horse broke into pitching. Surprised, Tommy grabbed too late for the saddle horn. The boy sailed up into the air and came down on his belly. Walter jumped to the ground to see about it. The dude went around without stopping. Snort and Huey looked each other in the eye. Huey saw the intention in Snort's face and concurred with a nod. Both unfastened their horn strings and shook loops into their ropes.
I'll rope the head of the goddamn thing, Huey. You come in there and heal it.
Spurring the roan horse, swinging the loop, Snort gave chase. One of the girls glanced back, saw him, and her eyes grew wide. The dude looked over his shoulder, recognized Snort's intention, and began trying for more speed. But the wagon road was rough and bouncy.
Damn you, cowboy! Don't you dare!
Snort's roan rolled its eyes in fear, but Snort kept spurring. In the final analysis, the horse feared Snort more than it feared the automobile. Snort threw that great boxcar loop and landed a catch around the dashboard, one carbide lamp, and a front wheel. He jerked up the slack back and took a dally around his saddle horn.
Now heel it, Huey!
Huey spurred Biscuit in. He cast a quick loop over one of the rear wheels and rode south. Snort rode north.
Damn you saddle tramps!
The girls grabbed hold of the seat. When the two cowboys hit the ends of their ropes, they jerked the automobile half around and ran it into the ditch. The dude was thrown out over the dashboard.
Well, we got it roped. But how do we hog tie an automobile?
The dude was stunned only for a moment. He got to his feet, eyes blazing and looking for somebody to fight. Huey was closest. He came running, his fists knotted. Huey dismounted and stepped away from Biscuit. As the dude swung on him, Huey ducked under it and took a solid hold. Huey wrestled the man to the ground. Snort, still on horseback, pitched Huey his tie rope.
Since we can't tie up an automobile, maybe we can tie up an automobile jockey.
Huey got the little loop over both of the man's hands, and then over one foot. He trussed him up the way he'd been tying steers. In a sudden flush of showmanship, Huey stepped back and threw up his hands in the manner the ropers used to stop the timekeepers. Clay McGonagall rode forward and leaned down to shake Huey's hand.
Friend, if you'd done that in the arena, you'd be carrying that silver watch.
One of the girls sat big-eyed in the car.
My goodness!
The other climbed down and untied the dude.
Get me out of this! Untie me now!
Snort rode the blue roan over to her.
Pretty miss, I'd be much obliged if you'd throw me my string.
Some of the crowd rescued Huey's and Snort's ropes from the automobile. The driver rubbed his hands where the rope had burned him, and the fight was still in him. But the crowd was laughing him down. He climbed back into the automobile and sat there, baking the heat of his anger. He looked at nobody and spoke to no one. Snort showed those gold teeth.
I do believe he sold on us.
Huey looked back to be sure Tommy was all right. He was. The laughing, cheering crowd then swept him and Snort along toward town, rejoicing.
I'll bet you we made history here today, Huey, old partner. I'll bet me and you were the first cowboys to ever head and heel an automobile.
All the way to town, they were congratulated and backslapped by well-wishing strangers who now considered them friends. Snort looked behind him to see if the automobile was coming. It still sat in the ditch.
I read in the paper a while back where some damn fools are fixing to try and drive an automobile all the way from New York to California.
Hope they ain't in a hurry.
Hope they don't run into no ropers along the way.
Cotton and Tommy found new friends among the town boys who wanted to show them how good the night fishing was in the Concho River. Coming out of a dry country where it was hard to find even a water dog, Walter's boys were receptive to the notion. It was just as well, because Huey knew he would have been a poor chaperone. Boys that age needed a lot of leaving alone anyway. As they started to leave with the other boys, Tommy turned to Huey.
You watch out now, Uncle Huey, and don't you get drunk.
Button, I ain't ever been drunk in my whole life.
Huey could have gotten roaring drunk without spending a dime had he wanted to. Snort was well on the way. Friends and strangers kept crowding around him in the arc light, trying to buy drinks for the men who had roped and thrown the wild devil car. Walter sat at a table with Huey and Snort, but he drank very little. He grimaced each time he lifted the glass to his lips.
Whew, whiskey must have come a long way downhill. Seems to me like it used to taste better than this.
Huey thought perhaps a residue of something had been left in Walter's glass. He took a sip from it.
Yeah, nothing wrong with the whiskey.
It's me, then. Lost my taste for it. One drink is fine. Second drink ain't worth a bucket of cold pee.
Yeah, I'm sorry, little brother.
It's just as well. If I didn't have anything in life that I liked better than whiskey, then I'd really have something to worry about.
Restlessly, Walter looked around him at the growing crowd, noisily bustling about the tables, clustering at the bar. His frown deepened.
What's the matter?
Nothing. Just kicking myself for the time I've wasted the last few years, worrying about missing all this.
Huey looked at the people.
Everybody seems to be having a good time.
Maybe they got nothing better at home.
You trying to lecture me? This is a poor place to be holding church.
I promised I wouldn't argue with you, and I won't. Well, I have to admit that I don't understand. There was a feeling between you and Spring Renfro. Anybody could see it. Wasn't it strong enough?
Huey poured himself a fresh shot of whiskey, but he didn't drink it. He stared into it. This wasn't a thing he wanted to talk about, especially not here. But he supposed everybody was making so much noise that no one except Walter would hear him.
Yeah, it was strong.
Huey remembered a feeling of guilt because of its strength.
It scared me, I reckon.
Scared you? That's not the way it's supposed to be. It's supposed to lift you up and make you happy.
Huey turned the glass in his fingers. He looked around to see if anyone was listening. Nobody could have heard him. Walter would be lucky to.
I had feelings about her that they weren't right and proper. She's a lady, Walter. She's got a right to decency and respect. But when I was around her, I'd sometimes get to thinking things. I know about women. I ain't no schoolboy. I've been upstairs with many of them wheel-ago girls, and no blush ever touched my cheek. Spring ain't that kind of a woman, but sometimes she gave me the same feeling I'd get from them wheel-ago girls. She deserves a lot better than that.
It's a natural feeling. Everybody gets it. It's nothing to be ashamed of.
Well, I am. And if I was to marry her, I'd have to face up to it. Sure, I know everybody does it. If they didn't, this old earth would get short of people in a hurry. But, Walter, I couldn't see me doing it. Not with her. How could I the first time? How could I look her in the eye afterward and not want to crawl off her under a rock and hide?
Walter's eyes softened. A smile seemed about to break, but he restrained it.
Huey, you're worrying about a ladder when there ain't even a wall. Believe me, when the time comes, it'll be the most natural thing in the world. There won't be any guilt. It'll be the opposite of anything. It'll be like you went to church.
Huey couldn't visualize any resemblance.
There won't be any shame in it for her, and there won't be for you either. You think there was any shame in it for me and Eve? No, sir. It's a natural thing. Part of life. Part of being human, for the woman as well as for the man.
He finished what was left of his drink and showed no pleasure in it.
You'll never know what I'm talking about till it happens to you. Then you'll wonder why you waited for 38 years.
36.
It was 38.
Whichever. You wasted too much time already.
Walter pushed to his feet.
I'm going down by the river where me and the boys made camp. I've had about all this wild pleasure that I can stand.
He gripped Huey's shoulder, then nodded at Snort. Snort acknowledged the benediction with a salute of his glass, which he promptly emptied. Snort waited for Walter to get out of earshot.
You know what he's trying to do to you, Huey? He's trying to get you to fit into the same tight little mold as everybody else. But me and you, we broke the mold that made us. We're free men. There ain't many of our kind left in this world.
Well, Walter was free once. Giving it up don't seem to have killed him.
Because they've changed it. They've cut him. The steer don't realize what he's missed, but he's missed it just the same. You ain't no steer, Huey. Don't be letting all them people make a steer of you. Show them you're a bull and damn proud of it.
Huey poured a drink and downed it all at once.
We showed him today. We showed him we was bull enough to head and heel an automobile.
Snort poured Huey another drink.
Damn, betcha we did. Here's to the best automobile ropers that ever straddled leather.
Huey drank to that. Snort leaned across the table, anticipation bright in his eyes.
What do you need with a skinny old maid school teacher anyway? Somebody to tie you down, put a ring in your nose? What do you get out of it? A life sentence to hard labor is all.
Snort pointed his thumb back over his shoulder.
I know where we can find us a couple of the prettiest gals a man ever slid under a sheet with. Not skinny either. Plump. Something you can really get a hold of. Not cold-blooded like some school teacher, but hot like Mexican peppers. They don't ask you where you've been or where you're going. They don't tie no strings on you or cry when you leave. But there'll be something to remember on them long nights you're laying out alone in some cold camp. What do you say we go over yonder and get a couple of them gals? We got her coming to us for the work we've done here today.
I don't know, Snort. I ain't sure I'm ready.
Nah, you got that school teacher on your mind. You ever see a school teacher erase a blackboard? One good sweep of her hand and it's all gone. Well, erase her. We'll find you a pretty gal down yonder, and that's the last you'll ever worry about that school teacher.
Huey still didn't move.
You don't have to really do nothing if you ain't got the notion. Let's just go down there and look. Won't hurt nothing to just look.
The whiskey burned Huey's stomach. His eyes were blurry. He was not yet so drunk that he didn't realize he wouldn't stop at just looking. They always looked good, those Wheelie Go girls, and they smelled good. When a man got close enough, they felt good. Once he ever went that far, he wouldn't stop. He never had.
Whoa, what do you say, boys? Time to head on down the street for some more fun?
Snort was up on wobbly feet, trying to talk a couple more cowboys into taking a walk with them down West Concho Avenue. Before he could help himself, Huey was out in the street with them. They were hustling him along in the cool night. Huey hoped to hell those two boys of Walter's had gone to bed by now and weren't still up prowling around where they might see him. He awoke slowly, dreaming that 12 spans of Missouri mules were running over his head. And when they finished, the freight wagon behind them got him, too. He became conscious of daylight through the drawn paper shade that covered a window. He found his hand, which weighed 75 pounds, and then his hand found his head. It came to him gradually that he was lying in a bed. He blinked. Slowly, his vision began to clear. He saw dimly the outline of a woman sitting in a straight chair, slowly brushing her long hair. His first thought was that she was Spring Renfro, and he tried to understand what she'd be doing in his bedroom. It came to him in a minute that he had no bedroom. He managed to clear his eyes a little more and see for certain that this was not Spring. The woman continued brushing her long brown hair and watching him dispassionately.
I do believe, cowboy, that you'll live after all.
Oh, damn. I hope not.
Huey blinked again, trying to remember where he was and how he got there. The smell of the perfume helped bring it all back. The memory slowly seeped through his brain. With the memory came shame, drawing over him like a shroud. What would Walter's boys think? What would Spring Renfro think? They ought to pass a law to keep anybody under 40 from drinking. Huey hadn't intended for anything like this to happen. Only 3 or 4 days gone from Spring Renfro, and now he lay in an upstairs bedroom of a Concho Avenue parlor house. Eve had been right in everything she called him. As he studied the woman with clearer eyes, he decided she looked 10 years older. He rubbed his hand down his side and found that he was barefoot from heel to forelock.
What happened to my clothes?
You took them off. You did pretty good up to that point.
I don't remember a thing that happened.
There ain't nothing to remember. Quick as you laid down, you was gone to China or someplace. You sure wasn't here.
You mean that? I didn't.
I mean, you couldn't. You went out faster than an electric light. I hope you ain't figuring to ask me for your money back. I was here all night, even if you wasn't.
Never in his life had Huey been so glad not to get his money's worth.
Honey, you keep it. In fact, I'll be glad to give you $5 more.
Her frown was gone.
Well, it's still early. I got nothing particular to do right now.
Yeah, but I have. If you'll get me my underwear and my britches.
He swung his feet over the side of the bed and almost fell off. She caught him and cradled his aching head against her breast.
Whoa, honey, you're in too much of a hurry.
Reluctantly, he pulled himself away. He knew if he stayed any longer, he'd become attached to the place and not leave until bankruptcy strained his welcome. He got his underwear on, then his hat, his breeches, his shirt, and finally his boots.
I reckon my partner, old Snort Yarnell, is in the house somewhere.
Yeah, he's taking a shine to Flo.
Well, when you see him, tell him Huey Calloway has decided to go back to school.
She didn't know what he was talking about, but he knew Snort would understand.
Sure enough. You come back, honey, anytime you take the notion. I could use the sleep.
Huey fumbled his way down the stairs, the woman following a few steps behind him, showing a concern that wasn't all bought and paid for. The early morning sunlight hit him like a sledgehammer when he stepped through the door. He had to cover his eyes with his hands for a minute.
You gonna make it, hon?
If I can live through the next 10 minutes.
He hitched up his pants, pulled down his hat, straightened his shoulders, and staggered out into the street. It took him a minute to get his bearings. He looked up toward the big Landon Hotel and remembered the red light district had always been to the west of it. The hotel itself was impeccably clean and moral, a place where preachers could stay and feel at home. But if they took a constitutional, they were usually advised to walk east, not west. Walter and the boys should be more or less south, somewhere down on the riverbank. He headed in that direction, trying to get his feet under better control. Presently, he spotted the camp. Rather, he spotted Biscuit, tethered on a long stake rope. With him, Walter's and the boys' horses. A lot of other horses and other camps lay beyond. Many people had come to watch the roping, but couldn't afford or didn't choose to spend the price of a hotel room, or even a little space at the wagon yard.
That's him right there. When you get a hold of him, keep working him over till I tell you to stop. I won't have some saddle tramp showing me up in this town.
He heard voices and looked back. Far behind him, he saw 4 men. At the distance and in the condition of his eyes, he couldn't make out who they were. He knew no reason it should make a difference. Trudging down toward camp, Huey smelled coffee on the fire. At the moment, coffee seemed vastly superior to whiskey.
Yonder comes Uncle Huey.
Walter, hunched over the fire, turned and glanced at his brother, but made no move. Tommy came running.
Where you been, Uncle Huey? We thought you'd come down here last night and camp with us.
Huey avoided meeting his nephew's gaze.
I ran into a friend.
You must have friends everywhere.
I try to.
We found a woman who had some eggs to sell. You look like you could find a place for a few.
Huey's stomach roiled. He wasn't sure eggs would find hospitality in there, but they stood as good a chance as anything. He was about to reply in the affirmative.
Now get that son of a bitch!
He turned. 3 of the biggest men he'd ever seen advanced down the riverbank toward him. Their eyes were purposeful and cold. Behind them, hands on his hips, stood the dude who owned the red automobile. He was disheveled, unshaven, a far cry from the handsome picture of yesterday. He, like Huey, evidently had put in a bad night. Huey backed away a few steps, holding up both hands.
Fellas, I don't know what he's been telling you about me, but it's all lies.
He knew immediately the truth was of little interest to them. One he recognized now as the bouncer from the parlor house. He looked as if he could wrestle a bull to the ground.
Fellas, there ain't no use in us going through all this. I'll gladly give up before we start.
It ain't nothing personal, cowboy. Mr. Fox yonder, he paid us to stomp hell out of us all.
Huey was almost to the edge of the river. If he backed any farther, he'd take a bath he hadn't planned on.
Well, tell him I've already repented my willful ways.
Talking won't fix things. He wants to see some blood spilled. He can just stand there and take it, or you can fight. To us, it don't much matter one way or t'other.
Fox stood well behind the 3 advancing men, waiting to get his money's worth. Huey saw that argument was useless, and apology never crossed his mind. It had always been his contention that when you faced a snake, you didn't waste time stomping on its rattles. You tried to smash the head. He attempted to dart around the tree and get to Fox, but his heavy feet didn't dart well. The bouncer grabbed him, hauled him off the ground, and swung a fist the size and consistency of an oak stump. Huey thought his head had exploded. He thumped down solidly on his back.
Boys, go for the law!
Walter came running, swinging a chunk of firewood. The bouncer went down. The other 2 quickly turned their attention to wrestling the firewood from Walter. One of them bear-hugged the wooden chunk to keep it from causing harm, while the other furiously pummeled at Walter. Cotton jumped up on that man's back and tried to take a stranglehold around a thick neck that would have been counted an asset to a Durham bull.
Boy, I told you to go for the law!
Tommy went!
Cotton gritted, still struggling for a hold that would have any effect. The big man pitched like an outlaw horse. In a minute, Cotton went sprawling. The man kicked at him but missed. Anger boiled up in Huey and brought him to his feet. They didn't seem so heavy anymore. He made for the man who had tried to kick Cotton. The man turned to meet him and they went down rolling, wrestling. Huey didn't have much chance to see what else was going on, but he caught a glimpse of the bouncer trying to push to his feet and dropping back on his knees.
What the hell am I paying you for? Get back in there!
Huey had only a vague idea what to do. He had never been much inclined toward this type of endeavor. During most of his life, he'd been able to talk his way out of scrapes, or have a horse that would outrun anybody else. He twisted and punched and gouged when and where he could. Sometimes he was on top, sometimes on the bottom. His head was reeling so much he didn't always know, but he had the drive to keep struggling. He sensed that Walter was making a better show of himself, helped along by Cotton, until finally the bouncer made it to his feet and punched Cotton in the stomach. Then the bouncer and the other man together gave their full attention to Walter. In a minute, they had him down. The bouncer, his head bleeding because of the lick he'd taken from the firewood, angrily began stomping on Walter. He bawled in rage, but couldn't work loose from the fella holding him.
Here comes the sheriff!
Fox started running away. Men spilled down toward the fighters. In a minute, the three hired toughs stood hunched together, listening to a big man with a shining badge.
You sorry sons of bitches! I'll be damned if I don't throw you into Who's Gal till hell freezes over, you damn stupid good-for-nothing bastards! You can't do this in my town, do you hear me?
They stood and took it like whipped pups. Somebody lifted Huey to his feet. They tried to lift his brother.
His leg is broke. Send for a doctor.
Huey wiped the back of his bruised and torn hand across his face, and it came away bloody. He knelt beside his brother.
Walter, you hurt bad.
Walter couldn't answer. He gritted his teeth and tried to keep from crying out again. Huey almost touched Walter's leg, but caught himself in time. He turned and looked back over his shoulder.
It was that biggest one done it, that body house bouncer.
The big man's anger was gone, and fear had taken its place.
You taking us to jail, Sheriff?
The lawman's reply left no possible doubt of his intentions.
Plumb to the third floor. What got into you, Jace? What'd you do all this for?
For money. We come after that feller.
The bouncer nodded his chin toward Huey.
But there weren't no hard feelings on our part. We was paid to teach him a lesson, is all.
I hope everybody's learned some kind of lesson here. Who paid you?
That fancy Janet. That Fox.
If there wasn't anything personal, how'd you come to break this feller's leg?
Well, it got personal when he hit me up the side of the head with a tree stump.
The sheriff had a deputy with him.
Les, go hunt up Fox and deliver him to the courthouse. I'll take these three fine gentlemen up to jail and entertain them at county expense.
The sheriff turned to Huey.
You'll want to stay with your brother, I expect. Doctor's on the way. When you can, I wish you'd come up to my office in the courthouse. Yeah, we got some talking to do.
Huey nodded. He looked back at Walter. The two boys were with him, one kneeling on either side. Tommy cried at the sight of his father lying hurt. Cotton's nose had been bleeding, but that had stopped. A big splotch was turning blue on his left cheek. He lifted his gaze to his uncle. Huey couldn't decide whether he saw rebuke in the boy's eyes or not.
This all come about because of you roping that automobile.
Huey had nothing constructive to say.
I reckoned it seemed like a good idea at the time, but I remember something my daddy told you. He said you never was one to think about cost or about consequences. Well, what do you think about this?
I wouldn't have had it happen for the world.
But it did. And Daddy has got to live with it. You're a good old boy, Uncle Huey, but sometimes you're a danger to everybody around you.
Huey bowed his head. He could see no argument with that.
Leave your Uncle Huey alone, son. He didn't mean nobody any harm.
He never does.
The doctor drove up in a buggy. He examined Walter's leg and found what everybody already knew. He made up a temporary splint and directed some of the crowd in loading Walter into the bed of a wagon. They hauled him to the doctor's office. There, he completed his examination, set the leg with help from somebody steadier than Huey, and he put it into a cast.
How long's he got to stay in that thing?
6 weeks at the least. 8, more likely.
Doctor, my daddy's a farmer. We got crops to finish up, stock to be worked.
The doctor sternly shook his head.
I don't care what he is. If he tries to walk on that leg in less than 2 months, he'll be a cripple for the rest of his life.
What are we going to do, Uncle Huey?
Huey had no answer. At times like this, it seemed he never did.
We'll get by.
How? You just tell me how.
Some way.
The courthouse was a huge Gothic stone structure, like something out of a book on the terrors of the olden times when young princes were smothered to death and queens had their heads chopped off. Its cupola stood a full 2 stories above the 3-story building itself. It made Huey's head hurt all over again to look up at the big clock near the top. He didn't know why he looked. It made no difference what time it was. Huey found the sheriff's office without trouble. He walked in reluctantly, hat in his hand. The sheriff had Fox and the other 3 men sitting on a bench along one wall, thoroughly cowed before the majesty of the law. He looked up at Huey.
How's your brother?
In a bad fix. He won't walk for a long time.
I suppose you know you're partly responsible.
Huey hung his head.
How you figure on getting him home?
I don't know. I reckon I'll have to borrow or hire a wagon.
A banker in town's fixing to leave early in the morning to inspect the loan out in that part of the country. He's taking an automobile. I believe I could talk him into carrying your brother.
You reckon that'd be faster than a wagon?
Yeah, anything is.
Well, sure then. If there's any expenses...
The sheriff pointed his chin at Fox, who looked very little like the dude he had been yesterday.
Mr. Fox here, he's in a generous mood. He's already agreed that he will foot any and all expenses having to do with your brother's... accident. Otherwise, he'll roost in the jailhouse till the snow flies.
The sheriff looked at the other 3.
Unless you have some objection, I've decided to let these men go. They all seem to have remembered that they were about to leave town anyway.
As long as it ain't west.
The bouncer looked at his huge hands.
Don't worry. I ain't going west. They got some rough old boys out there.
The automobile had a broad seat in the back. With some effort, they were able to prop Walter up so that he could be reasonably comfortable. Cotton was to go along and help take care of him on the trip. Huey and Tommy would follow, bringing home the 4 horses.
Cotton, I always promised I'd get you a ride in an automobile. I didn't mean for it to be like this.
You can't help being the way you are, Uncle Huey.
I'm gonna change, boy. Believe me, I'll change.
Cotton gave him a quiet gaze that told all of his doubts. Then he climbed into the green automobile. Huey watched the machine pull away, leaving a trail of smoke that smelled to him as if it would chase the devil out of hell. Cotton never did look back. Shoulders slumped, Huey turned to Tommy.
Boy, we just as well be on our way, too. We've seen about all there is of this place.
They went first by the Alvin Laudermilk headquarters, getting there at dinner time the second day. Huey had talked little to Tommy on the way. His mind dwelt much on what he would say here and later at home. Huey burst through the front screen and faced a surprised group at the table. Spring Renfro looked at him in astonishment, holding her fork motionless halfway to her open mouth. As he had expected, she looked a lot better than that Wheeligo girl.
Miss Renfro, I've changed my mind. I'm that-a-way inclined. But before I ask if you are too, there's something I want you to know. While I was in San Angelo, I tried to consort with a lewd woman. I couldn't do it. But you gotta know that I tried.
Spring pushed her chair back and slowly came around the table. Her initial surprise gave way to the beginnings of a smile.
It's all right, Mr. Calloway.
Huey held up his hands.
Well, there's something else. I wasn't at San Juan Hill. I never even seen Teddy Roosevelt, except from a long ways off. The day they went up that hill, I was flat on my back with the drizzling dysentery.
She walked up until her thin body was against his. Smiling, she laid her fingers across his mouth and brought her left arm around him. She momentarily forgot all her schoolteacher training and lapsed into the vernacular as she leaned her head against his chest.
Huey Calloway, I wished you'd just hush.
Huey had rather have taken a whipping with a wet rope than face the reception he knew he'd get from Eve. It would be colder than a witch's kiss. He put it off as long as he could, taking the horses to the barn, unsaddling, pouring out oats. Cotton came from the house to see his brother and his uncle. Huey found no cheer in his nephew's face. The bruise was almost black.
How's your daddy?
Cotton shrugged, eyes downcast.
How's your mother taking it?
You'll just have to go see for yourself.
Y'all make it all the way with that stinking automobile, or did you have to swap for a wagon?
We got in before dark, fixed 3 flat tires, only had motor trouble once, and I got that cured in about a half an hour.
You did? Well, how about that banker?
He don't know much about engines.
Cotton looked up.
Uncle Huey, he offered me a job. Said I could work for him driving and taking care of his machine.
Huey pondered that. He couldn't think of any job he would personally like less. But Cotton had a right to his own view.
You take him up on it?
I can't. With all that's facing us here now. But I wish I could. In San Angelo, I could take some more schooling while I worked. He told me I could.
Well, maybe things will work out, son.
Cotton looked at the ground again, a catch in his voice.
There ain't nothing to work out around here. Not anymore.
Cotton walked on. Tommy turned and followed him in silent understanding. They quarreled on occasion, but at a time like this, they were brothers. Huey took a long look at the house. Then he started toward it. He glanced back once, wishing the boys would follow him. But they were at the barn, and there they intended to stay. He took that for a bad omen. He thought he had prepared himself for anything, but the look in Eve's face was worse than the wildest stretch of his imagination. She met him at the front screen, blocking his entrance. In her eyes was a cold fury, almost hatred.
Huey Calloway, you'll not set foot in this house.
Stung, he moved back down from the step and stared at her from the ground. He felt as if he might choke.
Eve, I'm sorry.
Sorry? You're always sorry. But sorry doesn't fix anything. You blunder around like a bull in a china shop. You ruin other people's lives, and then you think all you have to do is say you're sorry? Well, that's not good enough. You hurt other people, and you don't even know it. You have no idea how that good woman cried after you when you left. And Walter, for years you've tried to lure him away from this place to wander around with you willy-nilly over the country. You've tried to tell him this farm wasn't good enough for him and that he ought to leave it. Well, you've just finally succeeded in taking care of that, Huey Calloway. You've just lost us this place.
Eve, I didn't mean...
He's laid up here now, helpless as a child. You think those two boys and me can make enough money to pay off Fat Girvin and C.C. Tarpley? They'll come and take us this fall. Lock, stock, and barrel. Everything we've worked so hard for, suffered for, it'll be gone. And it's all you're doing, Huey. But of course you won't be here to see it. You'll be off in Timbuktu or some such of a place.
Eve came down the step, pointing her finger into his face. Huey backed away some more.
I ought to shoot you, Huey Calloway. No jury would convict me, and I don't even think God would care. If you don't get on your horse and leave here now, I swear I'll do it.
Words had left him. Shame brought fire to his cheeks. He couldn't even bring himself to look into those furious eyes. She had every right to take a whip to him, and maybe even a gun.
Eve, I...
Hell, there wasn't any use. He backed off a few more steps, then walked toward the barn with his head down. He stopped once and turned, but she towered in front of the door like some avenging angel, her eyes ablaze. Biscuit hadn't finished his feed, but Huey pulled him off and left the rest of it for the burro, which had no name. He bridled and saddled the horse, his lips pinched hard against his teeth. Tommy stared with wide eyes.
What'd she say?
Cotton touched his brother's arm and shook his head. Huey swung into the saddle.
We're gonna lose this place, Uncle Huey.
Huey's throat was tight. He knew if he tried to say anything, he'd break down like a child. He didn't want to do that here, not in front of the boys. He might later, but it would be where nobody could see him. He gave the boys a tentative wave of his hand and touched spurs to Biscuit. Reluctantly, for he was leaving good feed, Biscuit moved into a trot. Huey headed him in the general direction of the Laudermill place. But he drew off a little to one side, skirting around the lower end of the field. There, green leaves rustling in the wind, was the crop of red-top cane, which was Walter's hold card toward paying off what he owed the bank this year. Standing outside the fence, trying to reach across to the feed but unable to stretch their necks that far, were three of the yearling cattle, also intended to pay part of the obligation. That much he knew the boys and Eve could somehow handle. But it wouldn't be enough. Walter had counted on breaking horses and mules for pay to finish out the balance. Laid up the rest of the summer, he had no chance to do that. Eve was right. All Fat and CC had to do now was wait. A nice, juicy plum was about to fall into their laps.
And I'm the one who shook the tree.
Huey reined up and turned in the saddle, looking back down toward the house. It wasn't much, just a box and strip, hot in the summer and cold in the winter. But damn it, it was home. He remembered the work he had done, helping Walter nail the thing together out of fresh green lumber. He looked at the shed and the corrals and remembered his part in building those. He regarded the chinaberry trees and let his mind go back to the day he dug holes to transplant them. A lot of his own life would go when the place fell to the bank. When? Not if, but when. It struck him that he was taking it as a foregone conclusion. And by God, it wasn't. There was still time, and there was still a chance.
Biscuit, before CC adds his place to his ranch, he's gonna know he's seen him a horse race.
Huey reined the brown around and touched him none too gently with the spurs. He put him into a lope that ate up the ground in a hurry. Biscuit started to turn in at the gate where the feed was, but Huey held firm to the rein and took him right up to the front of the house. He saw the two boys at the barn look at him in surprise and climb up onto the fence to watch. He slid Biscuit to a stop and stepped down as if he were back in the San Angelo Arena. Huey strode up to the step and pushed through the screen door. Eve, standing at the stove, turned to look at him, first in astonishment, then in rekindling anger.
Eve, everything you said was right. The worst of it wasn't half bad enough, but this place ain't lost yet, and by God, it ain't gonna be. You can go ahead and cuss me all you want to, but I'm staying. I put Walter where he is, so now I'm here to take his place. We're gonna make that crop. We're gonna raise some money, and we're gonna pay the bank.
Her face was flushed with anger, and her eyes crackled. But this time it was Eve who couldn't bring up the words to say. Huey pointed to the rifle on the wall.
If you're gonna shoot me, go ahead and do it now or forget about it.
You have the nerve to come back in this house after I told you to get out and tell me what to do?
Eve...
Eve heard her husband, but went on with the invectives.
Do you think I'd rather save this farm than rid you from our lives?
Eve, goddammit, shut up!
Walter's tone shocked Eve into silence.
I'll sleep out in the shed. If you don't want to feed me, that's all right. I'll cook for myself out yonder. If you don't want to look at me, that's all right, too. I'll stay out of your sight as much as I can. But I'm here, Eve, and right here I'll stay.
Tears trailed one another down her cheeks. She looked at him a while, gazed at the floor, then raised her chin and looked at him again. She squared her shoulders. Eve wiped her eyes on her long, faded sleeve.
You'd better go unsaddle your horse and then wash up. Tell the boys, too. Supper will be ready directly.